Welcome to another Words to Mouth quick and wordy interview, short, fast-paced conversations with authors about the books they write. Today, it's my pleasure to have on the show Bonnie Glover, author of Going Down South. Welcome, Bonnie.
Well, thank you, Carrie. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad we finally got together on this. We had some stumbling blocks, but we finally got it together, so I'm really glad to have you on the show. I took the liberty of looking on your website, and I saw that you started out in Alabama, and you grew up in New York City, and now you're in Florida, correct?
That's correct. I'm the Sunshine State girl.
Can you tell us a little bit about your upbringing and maybe how it's affected your writing?
I was born in Alabama. In 19 blah, blah, blah. And by the time I was 7, we had moved to New York. My dad was a New Yorker and wanted to go back to the city. And so I grew up in Brooklyn and didn't leave Brooklyn until I was 17, 18, going to Florida A&M University, which was a big culture shock for me. Going from New York City to Florida, I always tell a story about when I was on the, they call it the set at Florida A&M, how I didn't say hello to people, and that got me into a lot of trouble. And then when I went back home to New York and I started saying hello to people in the street, that got me in a lot of trouble too. So it was hard for me to kind of find my way. But I think I've always looked at people and been a student of people and their emotions. I think I'm extremely sensitive, and I can look at a person's face usually and tell when they're upset. And probably that is a function of the writer in me. I wanted to interpret those expressions, and then having this love of paper and putting stuff down and chronicling things. So probably naturally, and I can remember as a very young person writing a letter to my grandmother and my mother actually mailing it, and that letter had every emotion I could feel. I was angry with my brother. I put it all down on paper, and all it was a series of loops. But to me, it meant something.
Aww.
Perhaps from there. Uh-huh. I don't know. But I've always wanted to write, and everything else has been a byproduct of writing.
Now, did you keep journals as a young adult? No,
I didn't. I didn't keep journals. I kept the record. I don't know if people would understand this, but I kept a record of emotions, what I would feel anytime something happened. And I'm the type of person that would go back and say, well, why did I feel this way? And was there a real reason for my feeling this way? And when have I felt this way before? So I guess that was kind of my journal.
But not actually in writing, you're saying?
Not actually in writing. Oh, writing is kind of, for me, writing sometimes is very painful. And I'd rather sit and think about a situation than write about it.
Hmm. And do you like to write better, like typing into a computer or using pen to paper?
Oh, into a computer. Yeah, it's just so much easier for me. And I found when I wrote, my hands would ache. Just ache. But, writing aches too. When you really, I think, write from your being. And it might not be the best prose in the world for some people, but I know that when I write, my emotions really do come through.
Mm.
At least for me. That's what I'm trying to do, channel those emotions.
And now you picked a career in law as your path, and so you're still practicing law now, correct?
No. Well,
oh, no.
What I do is I mediate. I mediate employment disputes.
Oh, okay.
It's a little bit different than practicing law and going in front of a judge.
Right.
I firmly believe in the thought that people control their own destiny, and people, adults, are able to really make decisions on their own. So one of the things that I do with mediation is try to bring parties together so that they can make intelligent decisions about what should come next and either their in their employment relationship, and how are they going to deal with the obstacles. We have a supervisor and employee who aren't getting along, and there's been some miscommunication, or there have been some allegations of discrimination. How do we work with these people to change how they work together from a certain point on?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that helps me with my writing, because obviously there's a lot of conflict there. And there's conflict in my writing. How do people handle these situations? what happens when there's obviously someone with the upper hand making all of the decisions? What happens when they're in a session where they have to face someone, perhaps whom they've tormented or, you know, not done well by, mm-hmm. or vice versa? So how people work through those situations, and I think that that translates into my work because that's what I deal with, conflict situations in both mediation and in writing.
Okay, so do you consider yourself a mediator that writes, or are you more an author with a day job?
An author with a day job.
There you go. Okay. Well, how do you balance all of that? I mean, is this a full-time, 40-hour-a-week job, and then you come home and write, or?
No. I work for myself, so I'm able to take mediations as they come. Mm-hmm. I work for a freelance for some federal agencies, and that's really good. I also have two young boys, a 15-year-old and an 11-year-old, and I work to write.
And I have two girls the same age, so I understand.
Are you in the soccer van all the time?
Yes, ma'am. Well, with one of them, and then one of them's a golfer, so, but, you know, it's a busy life, so.
It is.
Can you, I want to talk about going down south, but I did want to ask you, since we're talking about your career, can you talk a little bit about a time when what you might have once seen as your biggest failure, and maybe now, after some time has passed, see how you might have grown through that or have seen it sort of as a success?
Well, sure. You know, not too many people know this, but I went to law school. I went to a pretty prestigious law school, but I couldn't seem to pass the bar. One time, two times, three times, and I was just, oh, what is wrong with me? I just couldn't seem to concentrate. I just wasn't getting the job done. And I think, I was really taking that to heart, and that can have all kinds of physical manifestations. And the third time, I remember coming home coming home after getting the results, and I was just sitting there, and I was boo-hoo-hooing because it's relatively expensive taking the bar here in Florida. And I turned on the television after I had a good long, long cry. I turned on the television, and there was breaking news story. It was the Oklahoma bombing. Mm. And that just snapped. That got my attention right away, of course, and that snapped all of that self-pity out of me. And I said, well, hell, you know, I guess failing the bar is not as bad as I thought it was. I think that anyone losing a loved one in something like this, some tragedy like this, that would be a tragedy, not passing the bar this time. Yeah. And I think I got my butt in gear then. And I wasn't going to, and I said I didn't go to law school for 3 long years not to be able to pass the bar. So I did pass the next time, and I use this. I talk to people about it. I do talk to people about it. It's not a big secret. And just say, you know, sometimes we have to go through for a reason. Perhaps I went through so that I can talk to other people about the fact that you're not really a failure. You just have to focus and concentrate sometimes. And it's worked. I mean, I'm not ashamed of it. It's just a period of my life that I had some difficulty.
Yeah, and I appreciate that because so many times we try to keep, you know, that front that we've got it all together and everything's perfect. And I think the times when you reveal some of those difficult challenges, if you open up to other people, you can really encourage others, because even people that are listening to this interview right now might be in that kind of in that state of mind and just hear you talking and go, okay, hey, if you can do it, I can do it. Yeah.
It's all right. And of course I've had manuscripts rejected.
Yeah.
even now, you know, some people say, oh, she's got 2 books published, and, you know, how could she go wrong? I still have short stories rejected plenty of times.
Yeah.
Plenty of times. And in fact, I've kind of said, I mean, not that I love short stories, but they might just not be my forte.
Mm-hmm.
And that's quite all right. I'll just concentrate on my longer work. But I just think that we have to sometimes just regroup and say, okay, let me try things another way, or let me really understand what's going on here, and let me be open to the possibility that this area might not be mine, and I can do something else. So it's not a failure. It's just regrouping.
Right. Tell us a little bit about that path to writing and getting that first novel published.
Oh, that was weird.
Really?
That was really weird. I belong to a writer's group, a network of writers, Zoetrope, which is sponsored by Francis Ford Coppola. It's a writing site, Zoetrope. And I made friends on that writer's site with this wonderful young man by the name of Eugene Datta. Eugene lived at that time in Calcutta, India. Well, we started critiquing each other's work, and it was wonderful. I really admired Eugene's work a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
He visited the U.S. at a time when I was actually living for a couple of years in New Jersey. He got a fellowship to a writer's colony in upstate New York. So we finally got a chance to meet. That had to be in 2001 or 2002, I think. Mm-hmm. And while he was here in the States, he captured an agent. Captured an agent, like you're supposed to go hunting for them. Her name is Elizabeth Shankman, and Elizabeth started representing Eugene. Eugene told her about my work. Elizabeth said, great, tell her to send something. I did. Long story short, she liked it, and I had to rush and finish the novel, which I had only halfway done, because I didn't really believe that she would like it. I just said, okay, Eugene, because he fired off an email, send it today, you know. So I had to rush and finish, and she took me on as a client, and she was able to sell it in a couple of months.
Wow. That's wild. And the name of that novel?
The name of that novel was The Middle Sister. That was my first one, mm-hmm. and I was just stunned. And it was a wonderful feeling being called by an editor. My editor at that time was Elizabeth Dysegard, the acquiring editor. And I was so stunned, you know, during this whole conversation with Elizabeth that she asked where she could send some of the other novels she had worked on with other authors, and I couldn't remember my address.
You were a little freaked out.
I was more than freaked out. I was walking around the house looking for a bill to give the woman my address because I couldn't verbalize it.
That's cute.
It was, I'll never forget that. And so now the second novel, Elizabeth has, I think she's with a nonfiction publisher now, mm-hmm. The Smithsonian. So my new editor is Anika, and we've just finished, and it's been launched, a new novel called Going Down South, which is, again, explores families and conflict. It's about a young girl who gets pregnant in the early 1960s and how her family chooses to deal with this pregnancy, which splinters, basically, the family and makes for a lot of change, and change is conflict.
Mm-hmm. And so the daughter goes to live with grandma.
The daughter is sent to live with grandma, only there's a little bit of a change because when they do get down there to drop, the thought was to go down and drop Olivia Jean real fast and turn right back around and get home in time for work on Monday. The grandmother, Bertie, has changed her mind, or rather, you don't know if she's changed her mind or this has been the plot from the beginning, mm-hmm. and says to her daughter, Daisy, Olivia Jean's mother, you're going to have to stay with your daughter. You can't just leave her.
Mm-hmm.
So it is about these three women, one mother-to-be, two mothers, dealing with a pregnancy and dealing with the fact that they've never really had to live together under one roof.
Oh, okay. You know, there is something that every woman can relate to as far as that mother-daughter relationship, whether you've had a close relationship with your mother or if you are a mother and have a daughter. It's a very unique relationship that can be challenging at times.
Well, challenging probably isn't the word for these relationships in this particular book. And people ask me all the time, you know, because I don't have any daughters, and I was an only girl. Well, I had two brothers, but I was the only girl. So why do you write all these situations with mothers, daughters, sisters, and... Right. I don't know. I just like to explore that. I've watched a lot of my friends with sisters, and it's hysterical to me. Mm-hmm. I've never had to share as much as people seem to have to share with sisters. Fascinating.
Right. It's funny because I was the same as you. I was the only daughter, and I had two older brothers, and then I always wanted to have girls. When I was, you know, growing up, I thought, well, I want to have two girls and have them be sisters, and guess what? I have two girls, and it's just, it is a very interesting dynamic between girls in that sister relationship and how competitive it can be at times and how loving it can be at times. It's just a very unique situation. What did you learn about yourself from writing this story?
I guess that I learned, someone asked me, I did a reading the other day, and this young lady was there, and she was so sweet. She asked me, so is it that you've always wanted a sister? I said, yes, I think that's part of it. I've always wanted a sister. But I've also learned that you make family out of what you find. You don't necessarily, my mom passed away when I was young. My aunt, who was like a second mother to me, has passed away. And you just make family where you go. And that's always, it's been important to me. And I think it would be very hard in this world for people to get along if they weren't able to extend themselves more and find love places where some people wouldn't necessarily look.
That's a good point. Well, Bonnie has been gracious enough to offer a couple copies of Going Down South for the giveaway contest. So visit wordstomouth.com and leave a comment under this interview post to be entered to win. Or you can call 206-309-7318 and leave a voicemail comment. Either way, make sure you email me your mailing address. Bonnie, what are you reading right now?
Oh, what am I reading? This great book called I Am the Messenger.
Uh-huh.
By Marcus Zusak. It is wonderful. He also wrote The Book Thief. Great books. They are marketed as YA books here in the States.
Okay.
But they're, as far as I'm concerned, they're really not. They're really about the adult condition. And I just finished reading A Vengeful Longing by R.N. Morris, a good friend of mine. He's also on the Zoetrope site. Excellent writer. This is A Vengeful Longing is set in the 1800s in Russia, and it's a murder mystery. Wonderful, oh. Scary stuff.
Oh, okay. Any other favorite authors that you'd like to recommend?
Oh, Dorothy Allison, who wrote Bastard out of North Carolina, which is in essence one of the reasons why I wrote Going Down South, because it was a story about a mom who had a lot of conflicts about the situation she was in with a boyfriend. And I think, I know one of the reasons why I wrote Going Down South was because Bastard out of North Carolina lay on my heart so much. I imagined a different way to deal with the conflicts that the mother did in Bastard out of North Carolina. So that book is near and dear to me. And on my to-read list is Edgar Sawtell. As soon as I can get, I have piles and piles and piles of books. In my house. I love reading.
Yeah.
If you want, one of the things I do have, I'm on Goodreads, where we have all those different books that we kind of put in the catalog.
Right. That's how we found each other.
That's how we found each other.
Yep.
And I love that. I love hearing what people are reading so that I can emulate them.
Yeah, it's a great resource. And what I'll do is I'll put that link on the website in the show notes so people can go ahead and check out Goodreads and check out your recommendations. So, Bonnie, what's next for you?
Well, I'm working on another novel.
Okay.
Well, this one, and you'll laugh, but it is about family again. And it's
no.
It's about sibling rivalry and the effects of infidelity on a family.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Hmm.
So, yes. So it's going to be fascinating. It's fascinating to write. Sometimes you never know what's going to come out of your own head. And I'm just enjoying things now as they come. And this new release is taking up a lot of time because, you know, as a writer nowadays, you don't just write, you have to market. So that means getting out and meeting people and talking. And as you can tell, I'm very, very shy.
No.
No. So this has been fun for me. It really has.
Well, Bonnie, is there anything else you'd like to share before we go?
Just that if you have a dream, if you really work hard, you can make that dream come true. And that sometimes even people with the best of intentions will tell you to leave it. And, okay, so they're right, but there are other dreams that you can have. I wanted to be a lawyer. And when I got that, I found that I didn't really want to be a lawyer. I wanted to be able to feed my family.
Right.
Okay, that was the bottom line. So I did get an employable skill where I could feed my family, and now I'm able to pursue my dream. So there are certain steps that you take, but to get everything the way that you need it to be in order to fulfill your obligations to your family, but there's also a way to fulfill the obligations you have to your heart.
Mm-hmm. That's great advice.
So say thank you for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. I just wanted you to tell the listeners real quick how they can get in touch with you.
Oh, my website is BonnieGlover.com, and you can always leave me your email address and contact information there.
Okay. And again, the book is Going Down South. And thank you so much, Bonnie. As always, listeners, you can go visit wordstomouth.com for more information about Bonnie Glover, her website, and to enter a chance to win a copy of her book. Call 206-309-7318 to leave a voicemail comment. Please check back often for more Words to Mouth, quick and wordy interviews, or subscribe at iTunes and have them delivered to your computer for free. As always, thank you to Natalie Brown for You Gotta Believe from the PodSafe Music Network, and take good care until next time.